proceed to the second case of the day, Illinois One News versus the City of Marshall. Mr. Weber.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Roger Weber, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Illinois One News, Inc. Illinois One News operates an adult bookstore within the City of Marshall, Illinois. And the City of Marshall adopted for the first time a comprehensive zoning ordinance that included adult regulation of adult uses within a week or 2 weeks after the bookstore opened at its present location. We have challenged the finding of the trial court on several bases, but primarily and first I'd like to address the issue of reasonable alternative avenues for speech. Under the line of cases going back to Renton and others, the courts have found that cities and municipalities are free to attempt to deal with the so-called secondary effects of adult businesses through zoning and other regulatory schemes, so long as they leave, so long as the city bears the burden of showing the reasonable government interest and that there are reasonable alternative avenues of communication available.
Why do they reasonable? Other alternatives have to be inside the city as opposed to just available.
Well,
take, for example, a city that's just 1 mile square where anybody can easily locate right on the other side of the city border. What sense does it make to say that only land in the city is reasonably available?
Well, I don't know the real rationale, but going back to Renton, the case has held that the cities must provide those alternative avenues within.
No, I don't see a holding in any of those cases that the reasonably available alternatives must be inside the same city. The 14th Amendment applies to states, not cities, so it's the state where the reasonable alternatives have to be available.
Well, if the city is operating and zoning in an isolated instance and there's no consideration of what other regulations might be imposed outside of the city limits, then there's no way that the city can guarantee that there's availability out there.
As I say, cities don't guarantee anything for constitutional purposes. The responsible constitutional obligations are those of the state. And it's a particularly interesting question here because you seem to concede that there's almost limitless land available in the vicinity. It's just not in the city of Marshall. It's right on the other side of the border.
We don't concede that at all, Your Honor. The city suggested that the court could look to the county, and because the county of Clark has no zoning ordinances, that we could locate elsewhere within the county but outside of the city of Marshall. We don't think that's accurate at all, and the city's own expert acknowledged his familiarity with the state statute and the county's code that has a 3,000-foot buffer zone from sensitive uses for adult uses. And he conceded that there was no consideration and no analysis done as to whether there were alternative sites available within the county. No one from the city looked at or presented evidence as to the effect of that state zoning restriction. I'm sorry?
Did you?
No, we didn't, Your Honor.
You are the plaintiff.
We are, but it's my understanding that for the city to regulate adult businesses, to the extent that it impacts on speech, their burden is to prove that their regulations are reasonably related to their legitimate governmental interest and to prove that there are reasonably available alternative sites elsewhere. And I regret to say within the city, the analogy that Your Honor gave me, if you look at Renton, Renton was a very small suburb of Seattle. And within a distance of 5 to 10 miles, the city of Seattle had numerous available locations. But the Renton court didn't say that Renton had the authority to make their residents interested in adult speech to go to Seattle. The Renton court said that they needed to provide reasonable alternative avenues, and I believe the language is within the city. But at any rate, it's clear that there are not alternative avenues within the city of Marshall. The trial court found that of all of the proposed sites that the city suggested to be available, each and every one of them would require subdivision. And I think that the best analysis of the cases that we've seen along that line is from the Levi versus the City of Ontario case, where that court held that as a matter of law, an adult bookstore cannot locate on any of those sites without a change in the legal status of those sites.
When the city presented alternate areas where this could be done, did they discuss the zoning ordinances that were in effect in those areas? I assume county zoning ordinances were in effect in the county.
In the Clark County, in our case, or
yes,
in the Levi case?
In your case.
No, the experts said Clark County did not have any countywide zoning.
So there was no zoning available, no zoning at all in Clark?
Not by the county, but by the state statute in the county's code, there's a restriction on the location of adult uses within
only the state, the county has no zoning ordinances of its own.
Correct.
Interesting.
In the Levi court, as they concluded, it strains credulity to say that you can count as a reasonably alternative site a place where a putative adult bookstore has no legal right to open and operate their business.
Now, that case is that's from the Southern District, California. We have no circuit ruling that mirrors that analysis, do we?
None that I'm aware of, Your Honor. But likewise, I'm not aware of any cases that say that a city can just shift its burden of providing alternative avenues by saying we can ban you totally as long as there are other cities or other counties where you can locate that are not too far away.
Well, when we're dealing with such a relatively small municipality, both in land mass and in population, is that such an unreasonable approach to take?
The only case
the immediate area outside the city.
The only case that I'm aware of that even suggests that is the Shad versus Bureau of Mount Ephraim case, and the court didn't really say in that case that was constitutionally acceptable alternative. It suggested that in some very unique cases, for example, a small community that had absolutely no commercial business whatsoever, that might be considered an acceptable alternative. But in the 25-some years since that time, I'm not aware of any case that where any court has held that the city can shift its burden of providing alternative avenues to other government entities.
Well, of course, you're just defining the problem away by saying it is the city's burden. If it's the city's burden, then obviously they can't put it on somebody else. But if the burden is that of the state, then how the state carves itself up into municipalities doesn't matter.
But the state is not the entity that passed.
You haven't bothered to sue the state, and maybe you can't, consistent with the Supreme Court's 1983 jurisprudence. But now, I won't do this again, but the 14th Amendment applies to states, not municipalities.
I understand.
It's the state whose action is in question in the end.
But it's the city's ordinance that we would be in violation of if we continue to operate at our current location without drastically reducing.
The city is certainly just a creature of the state, is it not?
I'm sorry?
A city is simply a creature of the state, is it?
It's a subdivision of the state, but I believe a separate corporate entity.
Yeah, a separate corporate entity operating at the will of the state, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah. The question I'm asking, which you haven't grappled with yet, is, I mean, suppose Illinois has a policy of having cities that are only a mile on a side, right? Each section of land is its own jurisdiction. And that next door in Indiana, each city is 10 miles square or 100 square miles, 100 times larger. What sense would it make to say that under the 14th Amendment, there's a right to have an adult bookstore in every square mile in Illinois, but only in every 100 square miles in Indiana, just because the state has chosen to have different sizes of municipalities? It makes no sense that I can see.
I think that if and when the state of Illinois creates municipalities of that size, the burden would be upon the state to do that in such a way that it created an adequate number of avenues for adult expression somewhere within those municipalities. But if I understand your hypothetical, every single square mile would be a separate jurisdiction under the umbrella of the state of Illinois. I think if and when the state ever created such a system, have the burden.
You cannot say, I'll answer your question only after the state passes those laws. That's not the way we deal with hypothetical questions.
If the state had in place such laws right now, the state would have a burden to
provide. The
question,
counsel, is hypothetical.
Give a hypothetical answer, no.
Okay. Hypothetically, the state of Illinois would be required or is required to provide avenues for speech.
And can you tell me what sense it would make to say that there would have to be room for an adult bookstore in every square mile in Illinois, whereas under the same constitution, it would be adequate to have one adult bookstore per every 100 square miles in Indiana? Is there any sense that that could make?
There is no more sense to requiring that production of alternative avenues than there is to say that every square mile in the state of Illinois would be a separate jurisdiction. I recognize I've not adequately answered your question, Your
Honor.
You're
just refusing to deal with the question.
Sensible position.
Go ahead.
We've also alleged that the city did not narrowly tailor their ordinance to serve the legitimate government interest. And in effect, this somewhat ties in with the question that I'm not addressing adequately for Your Honor. What the city of Marshall did was take their alleged secondary effects and just move them from one end of town to other locations in town. And we think if you look at all of the stated goals within their ordinance, the practical effect is going to likely acerbate some of those adverse secondary effects rather than reduce or eliminate them.
Now, how would that come about, Mr. Weber?
Well, one of the concerns they have is the truck traffic and increased highway traffic. The current location of the bookstore is about a half a mile from the interstate exit, where the trial court found that most of the clientele comes from. The alternative avenues, the sites that the city says are available, are on the south end of town and would require that traffic to go all the way through the city center to the opposite end of town.
Maybe they have a commercial incentive to have that traffic routed so that they'll stop and eat or...
I guess.
Whatever, right? I mean, is that... I'm not sure...
That could be, but in their... ordinance and in the preamble, they don't, and nowhere did they present testimony that they were trying to redirect the customers of the bookstore.
I understand. I didn't
do that.
I didn't mean it to be their focus, but shifting the zone where secondary effects may occur, a policy decision of the city. Why is that? Would that be suspect? I guess that's my question.
But the way the ordinance is written and compared to the goals they stated, the only way it acts towards achieving those goals is if it actually totally eliminates adult businesses from the city. The effect of this is to take the problems that they're trying to address and move them from here to here or here. It doesn't actually reduce them. In Alameda, they talked about concentrating or dispersing. We have one adult bookstore in the city of Marshall, so you don't get any economies of scales by lumping them together for police protection or any things of that nature. You're just moving the alleged problem from one location to another. It's not decreasing the secondary effects. And while we're not challenging the secondary effects in this case, we do believe that they are very questionable and that someday with the proper studies, they may go the way of separate but equal with respect to education for on racial discrimination grounds. The other point that we make is that when the city passed the ordinance in this regard, they made findings in the preamble that the ordinance, they had looked at a 1,500-foot buffer zone and then reduced it to 1,000 to try to comply with the requirements of the Constitution, and that they believed that buffer zone would leave approximately 11 or 12% of the city of Marshall available for adult sites. But their expert testified that the practical effect of the ordinance, the zoning, and the buffer zones was to reduce that to 4%. So by the city's own findings, they're not leaving as much space available as they intended to within their ordinance. And I just don't think there's a reasonable connection between the way they've relocated to their alleged governmental interest. And unless there are any further questions, I'll stop for now.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. Ms. Cope?
May it please the Court, my name is Ronald Cope. It's an honor to be here. I'd just like to follow up on Judge Easterbrook's point and the issue that you were raising regarding the possibility of locating outside of the city of Marshall. Judge Gilbert specifically found page A-40, he said, there is a multitude of available sites outside Marshall city limits not subject to the ordinance and close to interstate highway exits. These sites must be considered as alternative avenues of communication because they would be equally, if not more, effective than the sites available in Marshall.
Other than that abstraction, did he describe where these sites were?
No, but there was discussion. If you look at the record, Your Honor, you'll see that...
He just says there are sites available without saying where they are.
Well, we know from the exhibits that are in the record, and we know from the discussion that took place with Mr. Pollack, the land planner who testified on behalf of the city, and also with Mr. McLaughlin, that these issues were discussed during the course of the trial. There was not a specific site identified, but the fact that this land was available. And one of the unique things about Clark County is the fact that it doesn't have any zoning regulating this issue. So that there's that potential.
Do they have any zoning regulating any issue, or
don't believe they've adopted
zoning.
There are counties in the state that just do not have zoning.
They have zoning, but the zoning is either farming or zoning is R1, but that's neither here nor there. They have not passed any specific ordinance relative to zoning.
Relative to this issue, for certain, in this case.
And Mr. Weber says there's a statewide adult bookstore ordinance.
There's a state statute which is most likely unconstitutional because it didn't go through the same process that the courts require in regard to the location of adult uses.
What do you mean didn't go through the same process that the courts require?
Ordinances and
laws go through a legislative process.
Yes, they do.
Is there any doubt that this was duly enacted?
No, not at all.
Okay. Now, what does it say?
I believe that the state statute, which is not cited anywhere here, just prohibits, within 1,500 feet. It's very similar to the law that applies to liquor stores. Very similar kind of a statute.
It's a negative statute, not a positive one. You can't have one of these closer than so-and-so to so many feet to a school.
Exactly. It's a very short statute, and it does exist. I would like to point out, however, that the issue of...
isn't that to prevent cities from permitting it, passing an ordinance, allowing one within, say, less than that 1,500 feet?
I believe the intent was to make
it
sure that...
It operates as an inhibition on the city or village, not as or the county, as opposed to the...
It was to apply to everyone.
And yes, but it operates on an inhibition against the city or village. Passing an ordinance permits such a use within that distance of the city,
It would certainly preempt the city, correct, Your Honor.
Right.
That is absolutely correct.
And that's the only
correct.
Purpose for it.
That is one of the purposes.
It doesn't establish any place where they can do it. It just is where they can't do it.
Exactly right.
All right.
Exactly.
So it is not, in its proper sense, a statute which has to do with zoning. It has to do with what you can't do to issue one.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct. I would like to deal with this other question, though, about the availability of land within the city of Marshall, because there is land available within the city of Marshall. And the argument that the plaintiffs are making in this case is really not supported by the cases, and it's certainly not a point of law that this court should adopt. The fact that someone needs to subdivide their property in order to sell it is not a reason for considering that land not to be available.
Well, what's entailed in subdivision in the city of Marshall?
Your Honor, the city of Marshall is governed by two statutes and its subdivision code. It is governed by 65 ILCS 5/11-12-8, and also the Platt Act, which is 765.
Be concrete about what's involved. I can find.
Well, what is involved is really
The reason I'm asking this is because the plaintiffs say that subdivision is completely in the discretion of the city, and since the city of Marshall has already revealed that it will do everything in its power to prevent the plaintiffs from opening a bookstore there, one might logically infer that if it has total discretion over subdivision, The plaintiffs are going to get a runaround when they try to subdivide.
Correct,
so
Your Honor.
So I want to know what their legal rights are about
the
subdivision.
The subdivision is not a discretionary act on the part of the City of Marshall or any other municipality in this state. The statutes make it clear that plat is prepared by a registered land surveyor, that the only issues that are involved are the size of the lots, the location of roads, and utilities. After that, if Your Honor will examine the statute, you'll find that if the municipality fails to approve the subdivision plat within a certain limited period of time, which could be extended by agreement, the owner of the property, the person seeking the subdivision, may actually file an action. It's an action for summary judgment that's referred to in the statute. That's 11-12-8, and the circuit court bypasses the city altogether in the process and orders the recorder to record the plat in its current form. So there is no discretion. This is not a zoning issue.
All right. Your representation is that under these statutes, this is a completely objective and mechanical process. Anybody can determine whether the requirements have been met, and there's no discretion involved.
That is correct. We've cited the statutes and the City of Marshall Subdivision Code, which can be found online if the court wishes to see it, follows the language of the statutes. So that based on that, the planner who testified on behalf of the city identified at least 33 two-acre sites that would be available to the adult use. These are sites that have sewer and water. They have roads in the majority. They have roads that are already there. They have sewer and water that's already there. And Highway 70 is not, and Route 1 are not the only roads. There's Route 40, which also approaches the city from the south, so that there is alternate major roads that lead to these areas. Given the size of Marshall being a small city, this is certainly more than enough land to accommodate any other, including this adult use, but the testimony was there hadn't been any other applications for adult use that anyone knew about.
Is there then any reason why the city wrote its ordinance the way it did? The thing that makes subdivision required is the city's ordinance says that no part of the parcel on which this adult business rest can be within X feet of the defined use.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been very easy for the city to write an ordinance saying the adult business can't be within X feet of the defined use, and that would have avoided any need to subdivide these other parcels. Now, my assumption is that the city wrote it the way it did because it wanted to force subdivision, and it thought that that would provide a useful hook. Otherwise, the legislation is very difficult to understand.
I agree with Your Honor. One of the problems that a rural community has is that much of the land that's annexed to it has not yet been subdivided. It's annexed with the future in mind, and there's an expectation of subdivision. So most of the big vacant areas would naturally be unsubdivided. But Your Honor makes an excellent point. They certainly could have written it so that it would relate to the physical structure. My experience has been that sometimes presents some complications. I've even had people argue that you have to measure it from where the adult use is actually taking place, say the stage where the dancers are, as opposed to the areas where the patrons are sitting. And so it's much more common to measure it from lot line to lot line, which is an easier measuring spot. So that could have been the reason, but I believe that in this case, dealing with a city like Marshall, subdivision is expected if, as Renton says, the adult use is to go into the marketplace. Well, the marketplace here envisions that the adult use would go to one of the farmers or other property owners and seek to purchase some land. In order to purchase the land, the farmer has to break it off and sell it. And subdivision, by the way, is not the only way that this land can be sold. If it's 5 acres or more, it can simply be designated by meets and bounds and a plat recorded. They don't even have to go through a process. They can sell off 5-acre sites, and Judge Gilbert points that out. And it's certainly pointed out by Mr. Pollack in his testimony, where he says that the land could be split off as well as subdivided. So that this land is clearly clearly available under any of those tests. So it's not necessary for them to go into the county if they choose to stay within the city, and there are many alternate sites. I believe that I've basically covered the points that that have been raised dealing with that issue. I'd like to just point out that in regard to that one case that that was cited, the Levy case, that it is one small, it's the Southern District, and the plaintiffs have also cited
Southern District, California.
Southern District of California, and there are other cases, for example, the David Vincent versus Broward County case, 200 Fed Third 1325, where the court specifically contradicts the holding in another case cited by the plaintiffs, the Red Eye Jack case, where it says that that you can in fact break off sites, and you'll find that language in footnotes. We've cited other cases where it's a very common practice to seek to purchase parts of properties, to break off the sites. That is not an unusual circumstance and something which certainly could be done here.
Well, should the plaintiff have to go into the real estate business?
No, they don't have to.
I mean, much of your last few remarks seem to suggest, well, a lot of land, you know, and they can build a new store and, sell off. I mean, is that where we should be focusing here?
Not at all. But they have to go into the marketplace. Renton says you must go into the marketplace. And in this case, the marketplace, and the marketplace in many other places, requires that you approach owners who own this land to ask them to sell you a piece of this land. We're not suggesting that the adult use has to do this. In fact, the question of whether it's an adult use or not has absolutely nothing to do with subdivision. It's really asking the owner, will you please sell me a piece of land? And if they will, then they got to break it off to sell it. So that's the marketplace that I'm referring to. If the court has no other questions, I believe that I have completed. It's been a pleasure and an honor to be here. Thank you.
Mr. Weber?
Thank you, Your Honors. Mr. Cope talks about the availability of the unincorporated areas and the potential for breaking off lots, and we can see that the courts have said that adult businesses must compete in the marketplace on an equal footing. But because of the way adult businesses are regulated, they can never really truly compete on an equal footing. Very few, if any, other businesses have the kind of restrictions on where they can locate that adult businesses can. But the point is really, he's talking about what we can do in the future and what we might be able to accomplish. And the problem is, unless those sites, those 33 two-acre parcels, are changed, their legal status is changed, they are not available under the city ordinance. And Your Honor's pointed out quite correctly that the city could have drafted the ordinance to say the use has to be a certain distance from, but they chose to draft it in terms of the boundary lines. And the boundary lines are important, and as the hypothetical that I flailed away at trying to answer before points out, boundary lines are not just geographic divisions, they're geopolitical subdivisions. And if the state of Illinois were going to create geopolitical subdivisions and cede the power to those subdivisions to regulate speech, they would have to do so in such a way that it still comported with the First Amendment. And the state of Illinois has not done that. They have ceded the zoning type of regulations to the individual municipalities. And I think under Written and Alameda Books, the burden is on the city to prove that there are reasonably alternative available sites available, not potentially available, not available if you're able to successfully obtain and subdivide property or convince someone to split up their holdings.
Well, when you say able to subdivide property, Mr. Cope says that subdivision in Illinois is objective and automatic. You meet the criteria, you're entitled to it, no discretion. And as I read your brief, you described it as substantially discretionary. Now, where do you see the discretionary components in subdivision?
The proposed subdivision plans must still meet the approval of the local municipalities or the county or whatever entity they're approaching to approve the subdivision plans.
Approval on what standard?
I believe that Mr. Cope has accurately stated those standards are reasonably hard and fast and objective, but you still have to go through the process, and it affects a change of the legal status of that property.
What's the difference between that and a building permit?
In a building permit, I don't believe you're changing the status of the property. You're just getting permission to improve the property in some way, shape, or form. And as long as you meet the safety and building codes, then it's automatic. So the subdivision property process may, in fact, be relatively automatic, but it still has to occur before these sites are legally available. And I think under the proper analysis, that means that they are not reasonably available now, and the ordinance must fail for that reason. Mr. Cope also talked about the Vincent case, which he cites for the proposition that it's okay to require owners to break off parts of property or to subdivide. I don't read the case as expressly saying that. I think that the Vincent case said that there is no clear authority that says you cannot require subdivisions to do that, but it didn't affirmatively state that it's okay. And I think that to some degree that's a bit of an open question, and there may be some inconsistent decisions among the circuits. But I think the Vincent case is the best reasoned of those, because it points out that if a property is not legally available, you can't legally operate right now, it's not really available, and it defies credulity to say that it is. And if there are no further questions, I'll conclude.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Weber.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.